Guardian Unlimited.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Books podcast. This week we're very fortunate to have with us Michael Frayn on the occasion of his the publication of his new book, The Human Touch. Now, Michael is, as you'll know, journalist, novelist, playwright. He has addressed nuclear physics and the uncertainty principle on the stage, and now in this new book he has taken on philosophy. The first question that I have to ask him is he here? Is he really here, or is he my imagination?
No, I'm really here, and it's not my first venture into philosophy. I wrote an earlier short book called Constructions many years ago, but that was very short, and this is appallingly long, the longest book I've ever published.
At how many pages is it about? About 700 or something like that.
You've got it in front of you. 300 and something.
The question, are you really here, actually isn't quite as flippant as it seems. It does come out of the part of the premise you set up, which is that all the basic things that we take for granted, like a rock being a rock when we stub our toe on it, are actually up to be questioned.
Well, a question in the sense that it's very difficult to think what you could possibly say about the world if there weren't any human beings here to say it. There's an obvious paradox about the world. One of those huge things that stares you in the face, and I think everyone must have thought of this, but I've gone on thinking about it over the years, that if we were not here to say how vast the universe was, the universe wouldn't be vast. If we were not here to actually measure the size of it, it wouldn't have any particular size. If we were not here to identify objects as rocks, you pointed out, there wouldn't be rocks. That's one side of the paradox. The other side is that, obviously, human beings are only a passing, tiny, completely insignificant disturbance in the universe. They arrive very late on the scene, they'll depart very early, and plainly, as we all know, the universe existed before we were here and will go on existing after we're here. How do we make sense of this paradox? It seems to me that all philosophy, this is the root of all philosophy. This is why philosophers have tried to decide whether things like moral feelings, our feelings about what's beautiful and what's not beautiful, perceptions of the world around us are objective or subjective, whether there's something out there or something inside us.
You have a sense of us being the middle, and the middle in scale as well as at the middle of things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it is odd when you look at it that we are tiny by comparison with the size of our own galaxy, let alone the universe at large, but we're enormously vast in comparison with an elementary particle. We do somehow seem to be poised in the middle of the scale. We also seem to be poised somewhere in the middle of the universe. Well, there are structural reasons for all these things. We seem to be in the middle of the scale because we are assemblages of very, very small objects that have come together to make more complex ones, that have come together to make cells, that have come together to make organs and animals. But it does give us a sort of privileged position in the universe. We do seem to be sitting right at the middle of things, like a spider in the middle of the web.
One of the things that's been said about you, which I notice is quoted on the back of the book, is that you're the most philosophical comic writer and the most comic philosophical writer. And I get a real sense from this book that actually there is a comedy to the perception of the vastness of everything. And actually, how else is one to approach it?
Well, I think it's true. I think there are a lot of comic aspects about our situation in the universe. There's something comic about the whole central paradox I'm arguing in favour of. We are in a ridiculous situation, but it's a perfectly endurable one.
And this chuckle that you hear here, you do hear resounding through the book, which is lovely in a work that is actually very chewy in lots of respects. I mean, the range of reference is massive. Is the project an original piece of philosophical thinking?
Well, I hope it's original. Of course, I've drawn on lots of other people's work, and I've quoted lots of other people whose books and thinking I've used. And I'm sure a lot of the thoughts that I've painfully thought out for myself have been painfully thought out by other people, professional philosophers and perfectly ordinary people, for themselves already. But that's in the nature of thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. One of the bits I loved was your chapter, Is It True, about Lenski, which deals with poetic truth. And when a fact is a fact. I wonder if you could describe that a bit, explain that a bit.
Yeah, when philosophers talk about language, they always suggest that the absolutely essential element about it is truth and falsity. They're talking basically about factual propositions, but of course then the question is extended into questions of judgment. Are they true judgments or false judgments? And they make it seem as if the meaningfulness of language depends upon having some truth value. Even if we don't know what it is, what gives language meaning, they seem to suggest, is its relation to truth. It has to be potentially true.
So you posit two situations, one of which is what we would call true, and one of which comes from a poem.
Well, that's the way philosophers see language, and they very rarely look at language as the medium of fiction, of stories. Not only novels and plays, but the stories that people tell, jokes, invented things, which are plainly meaningful. But plainly don't have truth functions. The statements in these fictions don't have truth functions in the way that factual statements do. Well, it seems to me that philosophers have got things back to front. If we could start with fiction and understand how fiction works, it might cast quite a lot of light on how factual statements work. So that's why I've gone into it, and I've tried to examine how ridiculous all the criteria are that philosophers apply to language if you applied them to fiction. I mean, it seems not to mean anything at all on philosophical terms, but plainly it does. We read stories and we understand them.
And the chapter, should we just explain a bit where the title of the chapter comes from? I think it's a lovely jeu d'esprit.
The central event in Pushkin's great poem Yevgeny Onegin is Onegin shoots his friend Lenski in a duel, and I've just taken that as a particular fictitious event, which is plainly not true. There never was an Onegin, there never was a Lenski, so no Onegin ever shot a Lenski, but we understand the story perfectly well, and also compared it with the true event that Pushkin himself, the author, died in a duel. He was actually shot by a man called Dantes. And tried to see in what way how the duels relate to each other.
How long did this book take you to write? Is it something that's been bubbling away for years and years and years?
Yes, it is. I published the first book, Constructions, I can't remember now, back in the 60s, I think, 70s, early 70s. And ever since that was published, I've gone on thinking about the same kind of questions and writing stuff down and gradually assembling a huge mass of material. And then in the last two or three years, I've been trying to rewrite all that pile of stuff into some more organized form.
It's also, I would say, beautifully written, as well as talking about fiction, in the actual writing of it, you get a lot of the philosophy comes out of the way sentences are put together. It's a little bit from the prospectus, which is the introduction to the book, which seems to set out the premise so beautifully. The sun that heats the sea, that grinds the rocks, that makes the sand, was born, grows old and dies. The world, as we have understood since Heraclitus, is a process in which the persistent shape and identity of oceans and rivers are maintained by the endless flux of the particles that arrange themselves to compose them. We look closer and see that each particle is in itself a world in flux, a hierarchy of still smaller particles, of particles that are not precisely particles, but additionally and alternatively wave formations, fluctuations in probability, whose precise state can never fully be expressed. Now, that just seems to summarise to me the way that it's written, which is incredibly complicated theories put very simply, rendered into very clear, concrete prose.
Yes.
You've got their probability, you've got the physics from the movement between absolutely abstract to us and absolutely physical, as we would see it.
Yes, well, I hope it's fairly clear. I always bear in mind what Niels Bohr said, never speak more clearly than you can think. So sometimes it doesn't come out as clearly as I would hope, because I can't think more clearly about it. But in that section, what I'm trying to do is refocus our attention away from the world of things. I think philosophers in particular have got very obsessed with the idea that the world consists of things, and I mean not just physical things, but entities like judgments, perceptions, thoughts, and so forth, and that these have some kind of form, a physical thing-like form, whereas it seems to me the basic stuff of the universe is events. Things happen, and some things happen, assemblages of things happen rather slowly, and we can seize them as a physical object, think about them as a physical object. Other things happen very fast, and it's very difficult to treat them as physical objects. And a lot of things that seem like entities, when philosophers talk about them, like judgments and beliefs, are not really entities at all. It's very difficult to say what they are, but they're something much more fluid and elusive, something you can't put your hands on, something whose presence you can only detect, as with particles, by their effects.
Mm-hmm. Now, common sense comes in for a bit of a battering.
I would say the whole thing is basically common sense, isn't it?
But common sense is something that you challenge what we see as common sense notions.
I suppose so, sometimes, but quite often suggesting that common sense is a better way of coming at the truth than learned academic theory.
So the short answer really is that, coming back to my question at the beginning, is you're here because I see you and we hear you here, and the book is here. It will be out from Faber on the 21st of September. Thank you very much, Michael, and good luck with it.
An edited extract from The Human Touch appears in The Guardian Review on Saturday, September the 9th. To read it online, go to guardian.co.uk/books/extracts.
Guardian Unlimited.